Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Gittin Daf Nun Beis. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin today's shiur at the Mishnah at the very top of Daf Nun Beis. Yisoimim shesomchu etzel baal habayis. Orphans that are dependent on a particular homeowner. In other words, they live by a particular individual. O shemino lehem avien apotropos. Or their father appointed for them an executor, chayav la'aser pei roisehem. The individuals just mentioned are obligated to tithe the food, the fruits, vegetables that they will be eating. Rashi at the top line says, shesomchu etzel baal habayis la'asos al piv. They will follow his instructions. Now, here's a very important point. V'lo nismane lohem apotropos. This Baal HaBayis, this homeowner who's hosting the orphans, was not formally appointed as an executor, not by their father. V'lo mi Beis Din. The father and Beis Din and court are those that generally would appoint an executor. But that wasn't the case here with the Baal HaBayis. Afilu hochi, even so, ki apotropos, who he is like an executor. When we speak about an executor, there are many rules, many rights or powers that he has, and hence Rashi is telling us that this Baal HaBayis occupies the same role as an apotropos. The Mishnah continues, apotropos, and here with Aleph and Beis, there are two kinds of apotropos, we just referred to them in the Rashi, and there's going to be another Tanaic opinion, Abashol, that follows with an opposite approach. So the Mishnah tells us the first opinion is that an apotropos sheminu avi yisayimim yishava. An apotropos, an executor that was appointed by the father, is made to swear when the orphans become adult and they go on their own. So the apotropos will swear that he did not retain anything of theirs in his possession. However, minu based in lo yeshava, if he's a court-appointed apotropos, so he does not swear. Abashol omer chiluf advorim. Abashol says just the opposite, that appointed by father will not swear, appointed by court will swear. As far as the reasons for that, that will be featured later in the Gemara. The Gemara now raises a contradiction. V'raminu. The Gemara quotes a pasuk. We've included the pasuk on the side, Bamidbar, Perek, Yudches, pasuk Chavches. Kain Torimu Gamatem Trumas Hashem Mikol Masro Sechem. The pasuk is referring to tithing, the tithing of the Truma from amongst all the Meiser tithes. A Levi, for example, when he receives a tenth of a person's produce, he has to tithe from that a tenth of that, which we call Trumas Meiser. For our purposes, this posik is the basis for a general halacha. And we learn from the word atem, that's you, velo shudfin, and not partners. A partner in produce cannot tithe his partner's share without the partner's knowledge. Atem, velo arisim. Similarly, the oris, who harvests a person's field and brings him his percentage, and of course keeps his own percentage, the oris cannot tithe the owner's portion of the harvest, unless of course he received instructions to do so. Atem v'lo apotropin, and here is what we want to focus on: we dashed underline velo apotropin. Apotropism cannot tithe. Velo hatorim es shein shelo. And likewise, someone who is not an owner of the produce cannot come along and tithe that which is not his. So the question is quite obvious. In our Mishnah, we see an apotropis, and you can see we've dashed underlined that in the Mishnah, apotropis chayv la'asir peroseim. And here, in this Tanaic source, which deals with tithings, apotropin cannot tithe. Omar of Chisda, lo kasha, kan la'achil, kan lohaniach. There's no contradiction. It all depends. If the apotropis is tithing the produce that the orphans are going to eat immediately, so then he has to tithe, so that they don't eat something that's untithed. However, when it comes to produce that belongs to the orphans, but is going to be put into storage, so that he does not tithe. And when we say put into storage, Rashi adds on the third narrow line, lohaniach hatvua ba'otzer, grains put in storage, ad shigdalu, until they become adults. Loma le asuri, why should the apotropis tie them? L'chshigdalu yasrum heim, when they become adults, they will do their own tithing. Continuing in the Gemara, V'ha Tanya, here we have a Tanaic source brought as a support to that which we've just said. You notice that it's a long Tanaic source. There's some marking that you see in the Tanaic source, and the marking simply highlights the repeat mention of the distinction we just referred to, namely, l'hachil v'lo avalo l'haniach. L'hachil implies immediate consumption. Haniach means something put into storage. The source says, v'apotropin tormen u'masrin l'hachil v'lo l'haniach. Exactly what Rav Chisda had said is his resolution to the contradiction in the two sources. Source goes over, as our topic heading indicates, Dine Apotropis, laws that regard an apotropis. What else can we say? Umoichrim lohen behemo avodim ushvoches botim sodos ukromim lachil avolo lohaniach. The apotropism have a right to sell items belonging to the orphans that they inherited, animals, slaves, bondmates, houses, fields, and vineyards, provided the money that they get is for immediate use. That's l'hachil avalo l'haniach. They're not licensed to conduct sales of items belonging to apotropin if it's an issue of taking the money and putting it away in storage. And Rashi adds, because we're afraid that maybe the money will get stolen. And another possibility is that by holding on to these items, they might get more expensive. They might rise in value. Let me be more accurate. As far as Rashi is concerned, it's a function of the of their attachment through these items to their father's house. And it's a source of honor for them to have these items. So unless their sale is for immediate use of the money, they're not to be sold. We continue. Umochen lehem peros yenu shmonim v'siltois. Similar to what we said just before, here there's sales of fruits, wines, oils, and flour. L'achil avolo l'haniach. What else do apotropsin do? V'oisin lehem lulav v'arova v'sukah v'sitzis. And they make sure that the yosemim have a lulav, arova, a sukkah, and sitzis v'chol davar shiesh lo kitzva. And all other things, other items that have a fixed amount to them. And we're going to be using brackets along the way to indicate where the Gemara inserts explanations of that which was said immediately before. Here we had a general statement, kol davar shiesh l'kitzva, and the Gemara adds, lasuye shofar, to include shofar, that the apotropis shall make for them, acquire for them a shofar. The lochalahem sefer Torah, tefillin, mezuzas. They will purchase. The apotropis will purchase for them these items. V'chol davar sheish lo kitzva, and also anything else that has a fixed price to it. Vasuye megillah, to the inclusion of a megillah. the Ein Poiskin Aleihem, and we do not levy upon them a charity tax at Stoka. It doesn't have a fixed amount to it. Stoka is something that is on an ongoing basis is needed. There are always poor people around, so the things that like that that don't have a fixed amount to them, those are not levied upon the Yesoimim. And what else is not? V'ein poidim aleihem es hashvuyim. They are not to contribute to the redemption of captive Jews. V'lo kol davar she'ein lo kitzva. And not for anything that is not fixed. L'asuye tanchumi aveilim. To include costs involved in comforting mourners, buying food for mourners, or whatever is necessary for that purpose, apotropsim will not use monies of yesoimim for that. Vein apotropin rashoin lodun. Now there's a phrase that we have in brackets. We skip it momentarily. Lachuv amanas liskois benichse yesoimim. The phrase in the brackets, in the angular brackets, is not accurate. So that's why we skipped it. So let's read the Gemara again with the bracketed section. Vein apotropin rashoin lodun. Apotropin cannot enter litigation. Lachuv v'luz kois. To lachuv is to lose a case, or enter a litigation where the court case rules against the yesoimim, nor for the benefit of the yesoimim. So the Gemara asks, that's not accurate. This goes Milo. If he entered litigation and then the apotropos was successful, receiving a positive verdict, why should that not stand? Elo. So rather, what the apotropsin do not do, what's not binding, is a case where they ended up with lachuv. They ended up with a negative judgment, even though their intention, almanas liskos, even though their intention was for victory, but they ended up with the apotropos representing the Yesoimim's estate ended up with a guilty verdict in whatever case regarding benichse Yesoimim. And Rashi says that if the apotropsim did enter such litigation hoping to win, but they ended up with a negative verdict, the Yesoimim do not lose. V'ein apotropin rashoyin limkor barochik v'lid b'korov. The apotropsim cannot sell properties of the Yesoimim that are rochok, that are distant, in order to buy in their stead properties that are nearby. B'rov v'ligo b'yofet. They're not allowed to sell properties of poor quality in order to buy high quality properties. And the Gemara again inserts here my time. Why is that the case? When on the surface of things it would seem that it would be a good thing to do, the Dilma Mish Tadfin. We're fearful that that which he buys will suffer crop blast, will go bad. So leave things as in its status quo. V'ein apotropin rashoin limkor sodos v'lika chavodim. Apotropin cannot sell fields and with the money to buy slaves. But an apotropos can sell a slave belonging to the orphans and with the money buy fields. That is prohibited as well. Not, in other words, not to sell slaves in order to buy fields. My time, why? What's wrong with that? Dilma lo mishafyon. We're afraid that the fields that he would buy are fields that would not withstand some type of court challenge. If someone else would come to challenge their ownership of it, it might be found that the field that they had was not legitimately theirs. So don't buy a field that can end up not being theirs. V'ein apotropin rashoim lahoitzi avodim l'cherus. An apotropos has no right to set a slave free, set a slave owned by the estate and set him free. The apotropos doesn't have ownership over the essence of the slave. He doesn't have a kinyan haguf. a kinyan haguf is a level of ownership that would entitle he who has the kinyan haguf to set the slave free, while the apotropos doesn't have that. Avol mochrin oson lachirim, the apotropos could sell the slave to others. We explained before why and how that could arise, that he's selling their slave. It might be for immediate food purchase needs, or Tanakhama says to buy fields. So that the apotropos can do. Those who bought the slaves would be able to set them free. Rebbe Omer, Omer Ani, Rebbe says, I say, Afu no sein de me atzmo v'yotze. The slave, if he has money that is not part of the estate, that slave could give his value to the apotropos and buy himself free. It's as if the apotropos is selling the slave to himself. If the Tanakhama is willing to accept the idea of the apotropos selling the slave, not only to others, he can sell the slave to the slave himself, and thereby going free. When the term of the apotropos comes to an end, so a calculation must be made in which we will ascertain that he is not withholding anything belonging to the estate. Rashi says, the calculation is made regarding all of his expenditures, and he will swear that nothing is left in his hands. The Gemara continues, Shmuel Leil Oimer, Eino Tzorach, says that's not necessary. Eino Yisen Apotropin Noshim Vavonim Uktanim, we do not appoint as apotropin women, nor slaves, nor minors. And each one has a different reason. Women not, because it's not the way of women to engage in commercial activities, going out from one place to another and trouble themselves. We have a concept of kol kavoida bas melech pnima. In order to preserve the honor due to women, we prefer that they don't engage in public activities involving, as we just described, going from one place to another, buying, selling for the benefit, in this case for the benefit of the Yisoimim. So she would not, she should not be appointed as in the role of executor. Slaves not, because they're not trustworthy, and minors not, because they don't have the mindset required, enough mature intelligence required to serve as an executor. If the father of these orphans before his death appointed one of these, he has the right to do so. As we go on in the Gemara, some new markings appear. You see a diamond. The diamond introduces, and we're reading from the side under our Mivneh heading, Maisim, the incidents, Sherubam, the majority of them, Kshurim le Apotropos, are related to an apotropos. The volcano shape that appears is Havlotas Rabbi Meir. It highlights Rabbi Meir's name. It's for Kesher ben Amaisim to create a connection between the incidents. Now the Gemara. Hahu apotropos dava b'shivuse de Rabbi Meir. There was an apotropos in the neighborhood of Rabbi Meir. The havika mazvin arasov v'zovin avdi. He would sell apotropos. He would sell orphan lands, the Yisoimin lands, and buy with the money slaves, velo shavke Rabbi Meir. And Rabbi Meir would not let him do so. He wouldn't leave him alone. He protested that. Achvile b'chame, Rabbi Meir was shown in a dream the following phrase, ani laharos v'atol livnos. You think that I am coming to destroy and you are coming to build up? In other words, the dream was designed to deter Rabbi Meir from his protest, from his opposition. Afilu hochi, even so, lo ashgach. Rabbi Meir didn't pay attention to that dream, Omar, mentioning that divrei chaloimos loy malin veloy meridin. Dreams are of no consequence, not this way nor that way. Hano Beitre de Igri Behu Sotan. There were two that were incited by the Sotan. The Chobei Shimshi Havakominsu, Behadi Hadadi. Every Friday they would be at odds with one another, fighting with one another. Iklo Rabbi Meir Lahasam. Rabbi Meir arrived there. Akvinu Tlosa Beit Shimshi. Ad Deovad Lehu Shama. He tarried there. He kept them for 3 weeks until they came to terms with one another. Shamei, then it was heard, the Sotan was heard, the Kamar was heard saying, Vai da'afke Rabbi Meir lahu gavra mibese. Woe unto Hahu Gavra, it's him, meaning himself. Woe unto him, the Sultan himself, that Rabbi Meir cast him out of the house. Hahu apotropis de Hava Beshuse de Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. There was an executor in the neighborhood of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Dava called Mazvin Ara Vizovin Turi. He used to sell land and buy oxen. Velo Omar Le Velo Midi. And he didn't protest. Now, that's interesting to say the least, because we have seen before that apotropism cannot, let's say, sell land and buy slaves. The sale of orphan land is something that's you would assume to be highly restricted. And yet, you have this apotropos in Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi's neighborhood selling land and buying oxen, and Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi didn't protest. Sovar lo k'Rabbi Yosi. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi held like Rabbi Yosi. Desanya Rabbi Yosi, Omar Rabbi Yosi miyomai lo koris ishti liishti ishti lishuri shuri. All my life, I never referred to my wife as ishti, as my wife, nor to my oxen as my ox. Elo liishti basi, I would refer to my wife as my house. Lushori sodi, and refer to my oxen as my field. Why is that? Well, with regard to a wife, she is the ikur, she's the mainstay of a house, of a household. And hence, describing his wife as basi is an accurate description. Likewise, the ox is the mainstay of a field. Without an ox, the field will not be productive. What will plow the field? What will cause it to be productive? So the sale of a piece of land in order to buy an ox would be, in Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi or Rabbi Yossi's opinion, would be an upgrade, if not, and at the very least, a parallel type sale. Hano Yasmi Dahavu Samichi Gabi Hahi Safta. There were some orphans that were reliant upon or being hosted by a Safta, an older woman. Havu Lahu Torta. The orphans had an ox. Shokla Vizavinta Nihalayu. The Safta, this older woman that they were being hosted by, she sold their ox. Asu Kroivim Lekame Derav Nachman. The triangle that you see now introduces incidents that come before Rav Nachman. And with this triangle, so then you'll be able to connect this with the next case where you see also something coming to Rav Nachman. So the relatives of the orphans came to Rav Nachman. Amrulei, my avidita dezavna. They said, who appointed her as an executor? Omar lahu. So Rav Nachman answered, well, if you look at the Mishnah, it says, Yisaimim shesomchu eitzel balabayas. Yisaimim that were reliant upon or hosted by a particular homeowner, which we explained referred to a relationship, an association of someone acting as an apotropos, even though it wasn't formally appointed as an apotropos. And therefore, the sale of of the animal is something that can be done, as we saw, if the monies used are for immediate food purposes. The relatives asked for Iker, but the ox became more expensive, rose in price. So he answers, "Brishuso de lokeach Iker." It became more expensive in the possession of the purchaser. Question: Vaholo nikiti dummy. But the Yisoyimim did not yet receive money for it. And being that our relatives, the orphans, didn't receive money for it, the ox is still theirs. Omar lahu, so Rav Nachman answers, Im kain hainu de Rabbi Chanuloi bar Idi Omar Shmuel. If that be the case that they didn't receive money, then the case would be, judged in accordance with Rav Chanuloi's principle. The Omar of Chanuloi bar Idi Omar Shmuel, Nichse Yisaymim, the property of orphans, Hare Hain Kehektish, the Lomakni Ela Bakaspa, their properties are viewed as Hektish. Hektish is that which belongs to the Beis HaMikdash. And when we deal with, describe the clinching of deals with Hektish, Hektish functions in a way that's not the way of common chulin deals. In regular deals between the general public, a deal is clinched when, if you're dealing with portables, the purchaser draws the portable unto himself. We call that a kinyan meshicha. With regard to Hegdish, kinyan meshicha does not clinch the deal. As Rav Chanuloi says, Nichse Yisoymim are like Hegdish, for lo matni ala bakasa means the deal is clinched only upon cash payment. So the taina of the relatives here is what would carry the day. In other words, the ox went up in value prior to the deal actually being clinched. So their relatives, the orphans, should get their ox back. Chamre de Ravna Ukfa Yasma. Chamre, the wine of Ravna Ukfa, a Yasaim, an orphan. Moshuha bi arba'a. Purchasers bought this orphan's wine from the apotropos, each barrel at four units of money, $4. It went up in value, v'iker v'kom b'shisa shisa. It went up and is now worth $6 a barrel. And so let's go over the case again. Purchasers drew the barrels at the point they were worth four. In the meantime, they went up to six. They increased in value. Also, the kamei de Rav Nachman. The case came to Rav Nachman. Omar lahu, hainu de Rav Chanuloi bar Idi Omar Shmuel. The ruling is based on Rav Chanuloi's principle. The Omar Rav Chanuloi bar Idi Omar Shmuel nichse yisomerim kehekdish v'lo matni elo bekaspa. The deal is clinched only upon paying money. Well, money hadn't been paid, therefore the wine will go back to the Yisoyimim, and as you can see, it happens to be worth more now as a result of a market value increase. Moshuch Peri Miasmi. Before we continue, we should note the Nosei / Mivne heading on the side. A house marking appears, which reads Dine Kinyon Im Yisoyimim. The Gemara from this point on till Omid Beis will deal with laws concerning Kinyon, the clinching of deals when dealing with Yisoyimim. We'll speak about Meshicha, we'll speak about Domim. Domim is cash. Meshicha, we explained, is drawing the item. We've divided the discussion into its subunits. We have Roman numerals 1 and 2. Roman numeral number 1 deals with Meshicha. Aleph, Mashchu Peri Miasmi. Fruits belonging to Yesemim were drawn by a purchaser. Yasmi She Mashchu Peri. And in the opposite direction, Yesemim that purchased fruits, they drew fruits to themselves. Roman numeral number 2 deals with cash. Yasmi Shenosnu Zuzi Avur Piri. Orphans that gave money for the purchase of fruits. And Nosnu Zuzi Li Yasmi Avur Peri. Purchasers gave cash to Yesomim for the purchase of their fruits. In all these cases, what happens when there is a market value change? That will become clear as we go into the Gemara itself. So let's start the Gemara. There are more markings that we'll want to take note of as we go on. But in the meantime, the first case in this series, by the way, the numbering that we featured in our introduction, you can see alongside the Gemara text as well. Moshuch Peri Miasmi. Fruits belonging to the Yesomim were drawn by a purchaser. Iker, they went up in value. Now, understand, money was not paid yet. Hainu Derav Chaniloi Bar Idi. This deal is to be analyzed through the principle of Rav Chaniloi, which means, in practical terms, that the deal was not clinched when the purchaser drew the fruits. As a result, the Yesomim get their fruits back. At this point, they happen to be worth more. So it's to their benefit that money had not been paid. Zoil. The fruits of the Yesomim that the purchasers drew went down in value. So if the deal would have been clinched at the point of Meshicha, so the Yesomim will get the higher price. If you say the deal is not clinched at the point of Meshicha, so then the fruits still belong to the Yesomim and the purchasers will be able to pay the lower value. How do we rule in a case like this? So even though we gave a rule, but when rules are stated, one has to bear in mind that they're not necessarily always applicable. We had said up till now that deals with Yesomim are like Hekdesh and they're clinched only with the cash payment. In this case, if you're going to apply that, the Yesomim will end up losing out because cash hadn't been paid and the fruits in the meantime have gone down, the fruits of the Yesomim have gone down in value. So we say, no, the Yesomim are not going to lose out. Lo yehei koyach hedyot chomor mehekdesh. What that means, when we say hedyot, that's a reference to a deal being clinched amongst commoners, and a deal is clinched with the act of Meshich, withdrawing the item. Now, if you're going to say, in this case, that after the Meshicha from the Yesomim, if you're going to say that after Meshicha in a regular case with hedyotis, there is no backing out, then all the more so, we're going to say where you did Meshicha from Hekdesh, from the Hekdesh, in this case, is the Yesomim, there is no backing out. So we rule to their benefit in both cases. Here, where the fruits have gone down in value, we are going to say that the deal was clinched initially when the purchasers drew the fruits from the Yesomim, locking them into the higher price that they'll have to pay to the Yesomim. Another case. Amshichu lu peri liyasmi. Again, we're going to analyze this case with both scenarios of going up in price and going down in price. So here, the Yesomim drew fruits. So we say again, Amshichu Luperi Liasmi, the Yisoimim drew fruits. The executor took on their behalf fruits. Iker, the fruits became more expensive. Now money hasn't been paid. As a result, the sellers would prefer to have their fruits back. Did the Mashiach accomplish anything? Well, we say, Lo yehi koyach hedyo chomur mehekdish, which for our purposes means, if Mashiach clinches a deal with commoners, then all the more so it will clinch the deal here with what we term hekdish with the yesoimim. So the Mashiach having been done at the lower rate clinches the deal, and it's in accordance with that that they will pay. In other words, yesoimim are going to be paying the cheaper price, which of course is beneficial to them. Zoil. Again, what happened? The yesoimim, an executor, drew the fruits for the yesoimim. No money has been paid yet, and they went down in price. Well, if they went down in price, it would be to the Yesoimim's benefit to say that the deal was not yet clinched, so that they could give back the fruits and now buy them at the lower price. So, Savur Mina, the thinking was, Hainu Rav Chaniloi Baridi will apply Rav Chaniloi's principle, that only with money payment is the deal clinched, and the fruits would be returned to the seller in this case. Notice, though, we've dashed underlined Sovur Mina. We're going to see this a couple of times as we go on in the Gemara, where the Gemara presents in an initial thinking, but Rav Shisha Brei Dravidi, whose name you can see is double underline, will point out that in the long run, ha-ra'ah, do you see that there's a crown marking? Ha-ra'ah. This style Gemara will be repetitive as we go on in the Gemara, where a havamina is presented, the initial thinking is presented, but when you look at the broader picture, you'll see that it's not to their benefit. So as we said, the fruits in this scenario went down in value before the money was paid. The thinking was, okay, well, since the money has not been paid, it has the din of hektish, and the deal is not clinched, and the sellers get back their fruits, and the Yisoimim will be able to pay a cheaper rate. But if you say that, Rav Amar Leh Rav Shisha Brei D'Rav Idi, Rav Shisha says, if you're going to follow that approach, Ha-ra hi l'ditu. It's to their ultimate detriment. The Zimnin, the Mitzrichi Lepiri, at times, the Yisoimim need fruits. They need it for, let's say, immediate eating purposes. And no one is going to give them the fruits until they pay the money. So that if deals are left open with the possibility of when they go down in price, the seller is going to have to lose out. So sellers aren't going to want to provide fruits for immediate benefit to the assignment and wait until they'll insist on first receiving the money, which, as you can imagine, could be detrimental to the assignment in the long run. Another case. And now we deal with cases where the deal is, we'll say, is instead of Mashiach appearing, money payment appears. Yavi Yasmi Zuzi Apiri. Yisoimim gave money for the purchase of fruits. Zoil. And they went down in value. No Mashiach was done. Is the deal clinched? Well, if you say the deal is clinched, it's not to their advantage. Why? Because now they could get the fruits cheaper. So we say, Lo yehe koyach hedyot chomur min hagdish. The deal clinching by a hedyot is clinched with Mashiach. And therefore, we're not going to say that we're going to treat the Yesoimim any differently. And since the deal with a hedyot would be clinched only with Mashiach, and just the money payment is not enough, the Yesoimim can benefit from the fact that no Mashiach had been done yet, and They'll give the fruits back to the seller and buy them at the now cheaper rate. Eicher, the Yisamim paid money for fruits, and they became more expensive. Savor mina, hainu d'Rav Chaniloi baridi. The thinking was that we're going to apply Rav Chaniloi's principle, and there'll be no back out, and that would be to the immediate benefit of the Yisamim, because they clinched the deal by paying cash before the fruits went up in price. Omar lehu Rav Shisha Brei Dravidi. Ha ra he lididhu. By saying that the deal is going to be clinched in a case like this is to their ultimate detriment. Why? We continue at the top of Omid Beis. The Asu Lemei Mar Lahu, if you're going to say that the deal, in fact, was clinched without the Yisamim having drawn the fruits, the owner, the seller, is not going to be too concerned with what happens to the fruits henceforth. We said they received their money. True, the fruits went up in value, but if a fire breaks out in the domain of the seller, he's not going to trouble himself to save those fruits. The Gemara says, the Osu at the top of Omid Beis, the Osu Lememalu, the sellers are going to say, Nisrifu Chitchem Ba'aliyah, your wheat got burnt up in the attic. That's why they're not around anymore for you to take home. And why is the seller not going to be concerned? Well, he received, if we're going to say that, well, he received his money. That clinched the deal. True, they went up, the fruits went up in price. The seller, though, had no incentive to sell it, to save the fruits, to put out the fire. They weren't his fruits anymore. So, according to Rav Shisha, in a case like this, it's beneficial, it's the ultimately beneficial, to say that the paying of the money did not clinch the deal. And hence the fruits are still said to be in the possession of the seller. And if a fire breaks out, the seller will put out the fire, and it won't be a loss of the fruits of the Yisayimim. Yavu lehu zuzi liyasmi aperi. Yisayimim owned fruits, and buyers came and gave money to the Yisayimim for the fruits. Eicher, after the money was paid, they went up in value. Now, if you say the deal is clinched at the point the money is paid, so the Yisayimim end up losing out because their fruits now are worth more. So we say, well, the deal is not clinched. Lo yehei kayach hedyot chomor mehegdish. We are not going to say that in a hedyot case, where the paying of money doesn't clinch the deal, will be the case. And not so over here. But if, just like in a hedyo case, in a commoner case, with the mere payment of money, the deal can be reversed, so too, when dealing with Yisayimim, the deal can be reversed, and they'll get back, they'll keep the fruits that are now worth more. Zoil. Money was paid for Yisayimim fruits, and the fruits went down in value. Sover me, no, I know Rav Chaniloi Bairi. The initial thinking was that the deal is clinched based on Rav Chaniloi's principle that cash payment involving Yisayimim is like hektish. And with hektish, it's the cash payment that clinches a deal. Amar lehu Rav Shisha Brei Dravidi, ha ra hu lididhu. If you're going to rule thusly, you'll end up creating a situation of detriment to the Yisayimim in the long run. The Zimnin, the Matsuchi Lezuzi, you have a Yisayimim that they have fruits, but they need money. For Leka de Yoyev Lahu, and no one is going to advance money to them, ad yavi luhupiri, until the fruits are given to them. So it's to their ultimate advantage that that we say that the deal was not clinched with the payment of the money. Omar Ravashi, Anov Rav Kahano, Chasminon Ashtora, Deime, Dezira Yasma, I, says Ravashi, along with Rav Kahana, signed on a document of the mother of Zira the orphan, De Mizavno Ara Likarga, she sold property from the estate that belongs to the Yosom, to the orphan. And the purpose of the sale of the land was Likarga, to pay the tax. And the sale was done below Achrizosa. It was done without a public announcement. A public announcement of land sales is designed to create interest in the sale like you would find in an auction, to raise the price, to have the highest bid win and acquire the land. But in this case, the sale was concluded without the hachroza, and you would say that's a problem because the some end up losing out by getting the by not getting the top price. Now, why did they sign on to such a deal? Why is this acceptable? The Amri Nardoi, tell us, Likargo, Lemazoni, Likvura, for these three different purposes, sales can be made, Mizavnina Belo Achrizosa, sales are made without public announcement. Why? Because in these cases, there's a sense of urgency or immediacy to get the money. What are the cases? Cargas to pay the tax. You can have tax collectors that are very edgy, very, pressuring. Where's the money? And you don't want to infuriate the tax representative. So the immediate sale is to their ultimate benefit, even though, as we said, it's not going to fetch the highest price. But it's urgent to pay the tax collector. Food. You can't wait the normal amount of time for a public auction if they need food. They'll go hungry otherwise. So we sell without the public announcement. And if there's a need for burying someone in the family, so you can't have the body waiting without burial until hachroza is done, until the public announcement of the sale and bids are put in. So those are three examples of sales that can be done without hachroza because of the sense of urgency. Amram Tzava, Apetrepa Dias Mahavi. Amram Tzava, that's his name. He was an apetrepus for orphans. Also Krovim Lekamir of Nachman. Relatives of the orphans came with a complaint to Rav Nachman. Amri Lei, they claimed Kolovish Umichsi Miasmi. This Amram Tzava is dressed up in expensive suits. He's all dressed up, and he's using Yisoymi money, using our relatives' money for the purchase of these expensive clothing. Amalahu, so Rav Nachman justified such an expenditure. Kihechi de lishtamin mile. He must look important so that whatever he says, whatever he argues on behalf of the Yisomim, will be accepted, as he appears to be an important individual. The clothing make a person. Another complaint. Ka'ochel v'shasi miditu. He eats and drinks from their funds. V'lo omud, and he's not a man of wealth. In other words, we know him to be a man of limited means. How is it that he's buying, he's drinking and eating meals? It must be from our relatives' funds. Amor, so Rav Nachman says, you can't say that conclusively. Maybe Mitzio Ashkach, he found something, he found an item and sold it and got money from that, or he found money. Who says it's necessarily the meals and drinks that he is consuming is necessary from the Yisraimim's funds? Question. V'ha kol mafsid. But he is not taking care of the properties. He's causing them to depreciate. Omar lahu, so Rav Nachman said, Aisuli Sahadi the Mafsid, bring witnesses that he is causing a loss. The Isalkine, and I will have him removed. Yomar Rav Huna Chavron, Mishmei de Rav. Rav Huna Chavron, our colleague, says in the name of Rav, Apotropos de Mafsid, Misalkinon Le. An apotropos that is responsible for property depreciation is to be removed. The Itmar, apotropa de mafsid, an apotropos, an executor that causes loss. Rav Huna Amar Rav Misalkin Alei. Rav Huna, in the name of Rav, says he is to be removed. This, of course, is the Shita that we just saw quoted. Debay Rabbi Shilo Amri Lo Misalkin Alei. And the Yeshiva of Rabbi Shilo say that that's not grounds for his removal. Vilchasa Misalkin Alei. But the Gemara rules he is to be removed. Before we continue in the Gemara, we glance at the side where we have a Nosei / Mivneh heading, double underline appears, Havlotas HaApotropsim HaShenim. We're highlighting the different kinds of apotropsim, Mi Nishbao Mi Lo, Lufi Machloikes Tanoim. Under what circumstances will an apotropos be subjected to an oath? The oath that at the termination of his apotropos service that he did not retain anything of theirs for his own purposes. The Gemara opens with a quote from the Mishnah, apotropos shemino avi yisayimim yishova, an apotropos that was appointed by the father is to swear. My taima, why is it? Are we not concerned that if he's made to swear, maybe he won't want to serve as an apotropos? So we say that is not a consideration. Ilav de islay hano mine, if not for the fact that the apotropos had received benefit from that father, lo havile apotropos, he wouldn't have volunteered to be an apotropos in return for the favors that he received. And just because we'll impose an oath, that won't deter him from wanting to return the favor. Minu based in Lo Yeshava, if appointed by the court, then no swearing. Why? Milsa bi'alma hu di ovid lebei dina. This man is willing to do a gesture for the benefit of the court. However, the iramis alei shvua osim nuye. This fellow didn't receive anything from the court. He just wants to do a public good deed. So he's volunteering to be an apotropos. But if he's going to be obligated to swear at the end of his service that he didn't keep anything for himself, he's going to say, well, what do I need this for? And not serve as an apotropos. Abba Sholom Echiluf Advarim. Rabbi Ashol says that if he's appointed by the court, we can afford to impose the oath and that won't deter him. If appointed by the father, we don't want him to swear because otherwise he won't serve as an apotropos. My time on Minu Bezin Yeshava, why according to Rabbi Ashol, if he's appointed by the court, the oath can be imposed and it won't deter him? The answer is because the apotropos has a great deal to gain by serving as a court-appointed apotropos. Through the pleasure and benefit that he has, that a public reputation is established. He's a trustworthy person. After all, the court relies on him. Because of the shvua that we will impose on him, that won't deter him from serving as a court-appointed apotropos. If the father of the orphans before his death, he appointed the individual as an apotropos, we can't impose an oath on the executor. Milso ba'almahu di avdi la'adodi, the apotropos is doing a favor. Each people do favors for one another as a matter of course, but not there's no real financial gain for him in doing so. The Romans alei shvua simli, and if you place upon him a shvua, he won't serve as an apotropos. Omar of Cholan bar Ami Omar Shmuel al chilchisa ke Abba Shol. The Gemara rules like Abba Shol that a court-appointed apotropos is one who can be made to swear, and as we said, the oath imposed on him is not going to deter him because of the great benefit that he receives by being known now as by the public as a trustworthy individual. Tanya, Rebbe Elazar ben Yaakov Omer ze veze yishava v'alochi gidvorov. Rebbe Elazar makes no distinction between appointed by father or appointed by court. Both of them are imposed with a need for taking a shvua. Tani Rav Tachlifa bar Marova kamei de Rabbi Avo. Rav Tachlifa taught in the presence of Rabbi Avo the following: Apotropos sheminu avi yisaimim yishava ipnei shu no se sachar. An apotropos appointed by the father of these orphans is to swear because he is a no-say sochar, which means he got paid for his services. So he got paid for his services. He has to respond in kind by taking a shvua that he didn't keep anything of theirs. Rabbi Avol then heard this source. Omar Lei, Rabbi Avol says to Rav Tachlifa, At Isis Kova V'Kailis Lei. What Rabbi Avol is trying to say, without translating it literally, he's saying, "Did you pay the apotropos that you're calling him a paid executor?" The literal translation is, "At Isis, did you bring a kav? Kav is a measure, like a kav is a known measure. Did you bring a measure and measure out? Meaning." Did you pay the apotropos that you're calling him a paid executor? Eloema, but if you want to be more accurate, you should say thusly, Mneshu kinose sochar. He is like someone who got paid. And we explained earlier that if a person is going to serve as an apotropos, it must be that he had received something from the father of the assignment. So whatever favors he received, it's like he got paid. And now we have a Mishnah. The overall topic that is going to be discussed has to do with hezek she'eino nikar, damage that is not recognizable. The damage that was imposed doesn't change the physical structure, the physical shape of what was damaged. What is the din regarding paying for such actions? Does it make a difference whether it was bemazed, whether it was intentional or unintentional? Now we'll see. The Mishnah, Hametame v'medamea v'menasech, b'shogeg poter b'mezid chayav. One who defiles items like truma is a tithe given to Kohanim, which must be maintained in ritual purity, and someone came along and defiled the truma. Midamea means there was a truma present, and someone mixed there was chulin present. Chulin is common food, and someone came and mixed truma into the chulin. With the truma mixed together with chulin, the owner won't be able to eat it. He'll have only one option, and that is to sell it to kohanim. And when you have a limited market unto whom to sell, you're not going to be getting the best price. The price for such things is cheap. So someone mixed truma into someone's chulin. V'hamenasech, there will be a discussion more what this is. Yayin nesech is a common term. But as we said, it's going to be explained by the Gemara what took place here. So if done b'shogeg, unwittingly, then there's an exemption for paying. If if deliberately, payment must be made. Itmar, menasech. And here we have a machlokas, and we indicate this on the side of the Gemara under the Nosei heading. Machlokas Rav and Shmuel, almahu pirush menasech, yayin chavero, b'mas nisen. In the Mishnah, the word menasech, what is meant by that? So, itmar menasech, Rav Omar, menasech mamish. That means, I came and stirred your wine for idolatrous purposes. Right. One of the methods of serving idols was to stir wine in the honor of a particular idol. Shmuel Amar Me'arev. Me'arev means mixing together. Someone poured some idolatrous wine into kosher wine, thereby prohibiting the now mixed wine in benefit. Yayin Nesech, idolatrous wine, in fact, many aspects of that which is related to idolatry, results in the item being prohibited from benefit. It's called Osir Bahanoah. So we have two pshatim in what Menasech of the Mishnah means. Either taking kosher wine and making it into idolatrous wine by stirring it for the in the honor of a particular idol, or the mixing of Yayin Nesech into someone's kosher wine. Man de Omar Ma'arev, Maitam Omar Menasech. Shmuel, who said Ma'arev, why doesn't he say Menasech like Rav? Omar Loch Menasech. If the Mishnah were talking about a case of making wine initially into Yayin Nesech, there would be no payment. Kom le b'drabamine. The offender would be subject to the death penalty. Stirring wine for an idol is a method of serving idols. And in worshipping idols, one subjects himself to a capital punishment. And that's more severe than paying money. And we have a rule. Kom lei b'drabamine. He is established with the greater, rabo mine, the greater penalty. So that the Mishnah, which said b'mezid chayev, mezid chayev implies chayev to pay. That wouldn't be the case if menasech of the Mishnah was the actual making of yayin nesech. Ve'idoch, Rav, who said that menasech means menasech mamish, what about kom le b'drabine? So Rav will answer kid Rav Yirmiya based on Rav Yirmiya's approach. The Yom Rav Yirmiya Mishas Hagbohu Dekona Mischayev Benafsho Lo Havei Ad Shas Nisuch. You don't have Kom Le B'drabimine. In this case, Kom Le B'drabimine states that if you have two punishments that occur or appear simultaneously, so you choose the greater punishment and forego on imposing the lesser punishment. But if they're not simultaneous, then the concept of kom lei b'drabamine doesn't apply. And so Rav will tell you, like Rav Yirmiya says, that when the offender picked up the wine with the intention of stealing it, at that point he becomes chayev to pay for the wine. There's, at that point, the financial obligation sets in. As far as the mischayev benafsho, the capital offense, that doesn't happen. Lo havi ad shas nisa, that doesn't happen until the actual stirring takes place. So that the Mishnah, which describes menasech as being chayev to pay, that's true because the wine was initially picked up by the thief. The Gemara continues. Ulamandar menasech b'atam l'omer ma'arev. Rav, who said that menasech of the Mishnah means literally menasech and not mixing yayin nesech into kosher wine. Why doesn't he say ma'arev? Omar loch. So Rav will answer ma'arev. The problem or the action of mixing together. We're at the top of the Nun Gimel Amud Aleph. Hainu medamea. That's already accounted for in the Mishnah, where we see an offense carrying with a financial penalty for someone who mixes together. Medamea was mixing a truma into someone's chulin. So once I know medamea, I could figure out Me'arev of Yayin Nesach. One would follow from the other. V'idach, according to Shmuel, who says Menasech means Me'arev, but doesn't the Mishnah already say Medameah? So he says, listen, Knosahu, these issues are a fine. It's a knas. It's hezek she'eno nikur. We're talking about damages that are not obvious. So why is someone penalized for it? Why does someone have to pay for that? So it's a knas, because hezek she'eno nikur, according to this approach, says that it's not considered real damage on a Torah level. So why is compensation made? Because this is a knas. It's a fine we impose. And when you have an example of something that's a fine, it becomes unique, and you can't learn other actions from that. And that's what the Gemara means when it says umiknoso lo yalfinon. So by the fact that we tell you that midamea is chayav, I'm not going to learn from that me'arev would be chayav. Therefore, me'arev has to be taught separately, and that's what the Mishnah is doing when it uses the term menasech. In this discussion, there is an opinion, though, it's Rav's opinion, that one learns one knas from the other. He was willing to say that ma'arev could be determined from the fact that the Mishnah already says medamea, which is also an issue of mixing. The Gemara asks, ulamandi olev knasa miknasa, Rav, who learns one knas from another, state one and I'll figure out the other. Kol hani lomali, all the examples in the Mishnah. Why do I need all the examples? The Gemara answers, Tzricha. And here you have a standard structure Gemara. We have a long marking, because this section of Gemara is going to show, according to Rav, why each example is necessary, and I couldn't figure one from the other. Even though in general, Knosa mi Knosa Yalfina, and I learned one from the other, why in these, with regard to these examples, I need to state each one. The triangles that you see highlight each term, the Metame, Medamea, and Menasech, and at each point we'll see why it is necessary to be taught. We go back to the Gemara, third line from the top. Di'i Tana Metame. Had we taught that one is culpable for defiling someone else's produce, someone's truma, well, what did he defile? So we suggested truma one as one example. E truma, if it's truma hava amina, mishum de kol mafsid lo legamri. The reason for the chiyu, for the obligation to pay, because it represents a total loss. The e metame chulin, mishum de osir legrim tuma luchulin sheberetz Yisrael. And if the tuma the Mishnah is referring to is someone defiled someone else's common food, there's a rabbinic rule that it's forbidden to cause defilement to Chulin in Eretz Yisrael. So the fine is imposed because of his doing something prohibited. Avol midamea, emolo, but the mixing of Truma into Chulin, where it's not a total loss, it can be sold to Kohanim, albeit at a cheaper rate. So maybe there would be no Chiyuv if someone mixed Truma into someone's Chulin. And if we would tell you that medamea is an act carrying with it a financial penalty, mishum deshchiach, it's something that's common. It's common for truma to get mixed into chulin. So we impose a financial penalty so as to put people on notice to be more careful. And when we have when we're dealing here with rabbinic rulings. Are imposed when you have a common situation. Something that's rare would not be the subject of a rabbinic ruling. Avol mitame deloshia chemolo. But mitame, defiling someone's produce, which in the context is considered less common, so I would have thought that there wouldn't be any payment made for that. So therefore, in addition to mitame, we have to tell Medamea, again, in addition to Medamea, we have to teach you that Metame is also Chayav, even though it's not as common as Medamea. And if we had taught both of these as carrying with it a financial penalty, because there's no element of a capital punishment. But for mixing wine for the purpose of an act of idolatry, which carries with it a capital punishment, so I might have thought, Amalo, there's no financial payment. Chomash Malon ke de Reb Yirmiya. So the Mishnah is telling us, like Reb Yirmiya taught, that the two punishments, the capital punishment and the financial obligation, are not simultaneous. And from the point that he picked up the item, the wine, he became chayev, he became obligated to pay for it. The capital offense sets in only when he stirs it. The Gemara goes on with a similar type situation. It's going to be, again, a tzrichusa situation. Why do I need all the examples? In this case, we're going to be raising this question according to the source taught by Avua de Rabbi Ovin, where we see in his source the initial offenses that carry with it a financial penalty were Mitami and Menasech. What we want to emphasize here is Menasech was taught as one of the initial reasons for a penalty. If you say thusly, so why do I have to go on to teach Midamea? Let's see the Gemara. Ulaha de Tani Avua de Rabbi Avin Burishonoyo Imrim Hametame Menasech. Originally, the rabbi said that you must pay for defiling and for menasech. And later they ruled also for midamea. Kol hani lomali. What do I need all of these examples? Rashi explains that since menasech was taught as one of the first two penalties, and if you're chayav for that, certainly you'll be chayav for midamea. You see, if you're chayav from Menasech, which had within it a capital offense, which had within it a possible kum lei b'derabba minei principle, which would have exempted from payment, and yet we say there is payment, then certainly in the case of midamea, which has no kum lei b'derabba minei aspect, there's only a financial possibility, so certainly he'll be chayav to pay. So once we know that mitame menasech is chayav, why do I have to go on to tell you about midamea? The Gemara asks, so kol hani lomali, what do I need all the examples for? Tzricha, I need all of the examples. If I would tell you chayav for mitame mishum delokim le b'drabinei, because there's no capital offense involved, leading us to think that the capital punishment would exempt him from the financial penalty, avol menasech, the kinder abaminei. But for the act of menasech, which does have in it a capital offense, amolo, I would have thought that the fact that there's a capital penalty, capital punishment with regard to menasech, there's no need for him to pay money. So therefore, I have to tell, in addition to metameh, I have to teach menasech as chayev to pay. V'yash Menasech, had we taught just the case of Menasech, mishum dekom mafsid le legamri, because that result, that causes a total loss to the wine owner. Avo metame, delo mafsid le legamri, emolo. But in the case of defiling someone's taros, which is not a total loss, how is it not a total loss? So Rashi points out, when something comes tame, when truma becomes tame, it can be used still as fuel. It can be thrown into a fire and serve as fuel. It can be fed to the animal belonging to a kohen. So it's not a total loss. Amolo, I would think that maybe there's no chiyuv to compensate for metame taros shel chaver. We taught the financial penalty for metame and menasech mishum dehefsid meruba, because they represent a major loss. When the truma was tohor, so it could serve as food, someone's dinner, it has a lot of value to it. But that same food, once it's defiled, we said becomes an animal feeder, fuel. that's worth much less than it was as a meal food. That's called a hefsid mu'at, a big loss. Avol medamea, the hefsid mu'at, aim low. But for the offensive, I mean, mixing truma into someone's chul, it's not a big loss. We said it could be sold to kehanim at a slight loss. So maybe, since it can be sold to kehanim, the owner isn't going to be losing out very much, so maybe there's no chiyuv to pay for medamea. Sricho, therefore we have to tell you that even in that case, the offender has to pay for ruining the chulin owned by that individual. The continuation of the Gemara deals with the concept of Hezek Shenu Nikr, the concept that we've been working with till now, even though it wasn't stated explicitly in the Gemara. But as we, when we go on in the Gemara, Mirtz Hashem, we'll see Chizki and Rabbi Yochanan arguing from the Torah's perspective, what is the din of Hezek Shenu Nikr? Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.